Welcome to International Edition. I'm Susan Yawkey in Washington. Ahead, the U.S. Defense Secretary stops off in Iraq. The U.S. Supreme Court hears a controversial immigration case. Dogs are being used to settle nerves at the airport.
These are dogs that are well-behaved, socialized dogs, to come to 7 airports in the United States, including Dulles, to greet passengers.
And we'll get a preview of singer Kenny Rogers' last world tour. It's right here on The Voice of America. U.S. Defense Secretary Ash Carter traveled to Iraq today to talk with his commanders and Iraqi leaders. Traveling with the official is Pentagon correspondent Carla Babb, and she joins us on the line. Hi, Carla.
Hi, Susan.
Say, what is the Defense Secretary hoping to accomplish with this visit to Iraq?
Well, I think he has several different things on his agenda. He wants to focus on what the Iraqis need and what the coalition needs to do to accelerate the campaign against the Islamic State. He's looking at 3 key areas. He's looking at what can be done economically. What do the Iraqis need to help them rebuild the areas that they've retaken from the Islamic State? He's also looking at political reforms and pushing for political development within Baghdad. And then finally, he wants to look at the military campaign itself and see what can the U.S. contribute to the Iraqis and to the coalition to make this a stronger defense against the Islamic State.
What is the United States already doing?
Well, the United States already has thousands of troops here. They've been providing trainers to help build up the Iraqi army. They've also provided a lot of ammunition and equipment. And I think that what they're going to be looking for from the Iraqis is, what more do you need from us? Is that going to be in the form of Apache helicopters, which have been offered before and not yet taken? Is that going to be in the form of more troops on the ground, more U.S. troops on the ground, be they in a training role or be they in a more advise and assist role or in some other form of protection, possibly sending them in to help with Apache helicopters? Because if there is going to be more equipment that's going to be sent in, then they will have to have U.S. personnel on the ground to help those things be executed as quickly as possible.
The fight to retake Mosul is also an important issue to the secretary, I understand.
Yes, a senior defense official has told me that the road is all about Mosul because Mosul is the key to defeating the Islamic State in Iraq. It's Iraq's second most populous city, and it's been a stronghold for the Islamic State since summer of 2014. So all of the things that are being going militarily are to try to help the Iraqis encircle Mosul so they can squeeze the Islamic State out of that stronghold.
The defense secretary doesn't have carte blanche for doing everything he might want to do there in Iraq.
Well, actually, the secretary has been telling reporters on this trip that the president of the United States has been very helpful and has not denied anything that they have asked once the Iraqis ask for it. That's been the sensitivity, because more U.S. troops on the ground is going to be a very sensitive thing for the Iraqis. The Iraqis take pride in doing this fight themselves. They do not want to have a lot of Americans on the ground. President Obama does not want to have a lot of Americans on the ground either, because, as Secretary Carter has put it, this is not about U.S. troops substituting for local forces. Everything that is being done here by the United States is to enable those local forces to push the Islamic State out.
Well, do you know where the defense secretary is going next?
After this trip, the secretary is going to be heading to Saudi Arabia, where he will focus on that economic front. He is going to be talking to some of the Gulf Cooperation Council leaders, asking them to help put money into the Iraqi government so they can start rebuilding some of these areas that the Islamic State has demolished.
Well, thank you very much, Carla, for speaking with us today from Baghdad.
Absolutely.
Now, with a look at what's being said on Twitter and Facebook concerning this story, is our social media reporter, Andrew Palchevsky. Welcome, Andrew, as always.
Thank you for having me, as always. Well, we have from Masroor Barzani. He's the chancellor of the Kurdistan Regional Security Council. He took to Twitter He tweeted out, he said, I welcome the announcement by Secretary Ashton Carter to give financial aid to our Peshmerga and increase military engagement in the war on ISIL. He followed that up with a tweet where he said, this war is a shared responsibility, and I hope other members of the global coalition will consider increasing their aid to Kurdistan.
So, it's really interesting how social media is getting all through everything, politics,
absolutely.
Governments.
The fact that he took to social media and took to Twitter to express these views speaks volumes about the power of social media.
It works. That's why they do it.
It works, and especially the power of social media, as we've talked about before, with ISIL. ISIL has been very adept at using social media to try to recruit. So this maybe is a calculated move that he did this on Twitter, saying, oh, well, you're trying to use it, ISIL, to recruit people and to do your evil deeds. Well, guess what? We're putting out this good news right on Twitter alongside what you're doing.
And talking about evil deeds, today might be an evil deed for some people.
Yes, the tax man cometh here in the U.S. It's hashtag tax day. Now, usually the day that everybody in the U.S. has to pay their taxes is April 15th, but there's a holiday here in Washington, D.C. called Emancipation Day, and it was when President Abraham Lincoln signed the Emancipation Proclamation freeing the slaves. Now, that's usually celebrated on April 16th, but when it falls on a weekend, I just looked this up, thanks to the power of social media, people have reported on this.
And your fast fingers.
And my fast fingers on my smartphone. When Emancipation Day falls on April 16th, and that April 16th is on a weekend, it's celebrated on the nearest weekday. So April 16th was a Saturday. That's why they celebrated it on the 15th, which is the Friday.
That way everybody gets an extra day off.
Right. Everybody gets an extra day off, an extra weekend to do their taxes. So they move tax day to April 18th. And people actually note this on social media. They say, you know, tax day was moved back a couple days, and I still couldn't get it done in time. I was still rushing to get it done. But a lot of people are having fun with it. They're doing, you know, freebies and deals at different restaurants and things advertised on social media saying, come in and spend your tax refund. A lot of people embracing it, though, and using that for an opportunity to talk about tax reform and other financial issues. So
there's a serious side, too.
Yes. And as the day progresses, we're going to see, as we do every year, people lined up at the post office quarter to midnight trying to get it postmarked by the date. It always happens, and I expect we'll see video and pictures of that on social media.
Okay. Well, thank you, Andrew.
Thank you.
This is VOA.
This is Science in a Minute.
Renowned physicist and cosmologist Stephen Hawking and Russian internet investor and physicist Yuri Milner recently announced an ambitious new program they hope will someday send a fleet of tiny spacecraft to the stars to explore space and search for life in the universe. Called Breakthrough Starshot, the project plans to send gram-sized nanocraft into deep space at a velocity of about one-fifth the speed of light. The tiny spacecraft would be driven by a powerful laser beam generated here on Earth. The probes would capture images and gather scientific data of possible planets in Alpha Centauri, the nearest star system, in just a little over 20 years after being launched. Considering that the Alpha Centauri star system is 4.37 light years away from us, it would take nearly 30,000 years for today's fastest spacecraft to reach the system. The plan is to launch them to Alpha Centauri within the next generation. I'm VOA's Rick Pantaleo.
The Supreme Court heard opening arguments today in a landmark case on the legality of President Barack Obama's executive actions on immigration. Reporter Catherine Gibson sat in on the proceedings and joins us on the line outside the Supreme Court. Catherine, welcome, but I hear a lot of noise going on in the background. Those demonstrators.
That's right. We've got about, I'd say, probably hundreds, if not 1,000 people spilling out on the streets around the Supreme Court. They're protesting, they're beating drums, they're saying that today was a victory for their cause, for immigrants, undocumented immigrants in America. It's a very lively scene out here.
Why do they feel it's a victory for them?
They feel, what was interesting in the oral arguments is that it centered on this one phrase, lawful presence. And that means that are these people under the DACA and DAPA statutes from President Obama given lawful presence in the United States, and that entitles them to work authorizations, the possibility of applying for driver's licenses, all of these side benefits that really mean that they can build a life here in the United States. And from listening to the justices and what they were asking about the brief, it seems like they really drilled down on that one phrase, and that will be key, and that they are worried that if they just take that out, then this isn't going to be a problem, and DACA will go forward.
Maybe we should give our listeners a little background on what this is all about, if you could
Absolutely.
Briefly explain it for us.
Right. So in November of 2014, President Obama said that because Congress had failed to act on immigration reform, he was then going to institute a series of executive actions directing the Department of Homeland Security about its immigration enforcement priorities. Now, the debate here is whether President Obama actually made new immigration law with those executive actions. His administration says he is not. Of course, the other side, the states, and in this case, the state of Texas, are saying that he has.
And this is a big expense for the states if they lose.
That's absolutely right. So one of Texas's main arguments is that because of this DACA statute, they have to then provide driver's licenses to many new people within their state, and that will cause them an unnecessary expense.
A ruling in this case might have a significant effect on presidential powers in the future.
Oh, absolutely. And that was something that the justices were clearly concerned about. They were mentioning that when they were questioning the lawyers who were in there arguing, just saying this has big implications for future administrations, not just the Obama administration.
One thing that makes this even more complicated and chaotic is that we don't have 9 justices right now due to the death of one of the justices.
That's very true. And if there's a 4-4 split on the court, that means that it would only apply to the Texas case. There are 25 other lawsuits relating to this that would then have to work their way through lower U.S. courts. It would not set a Supreme Court precedent. So that absence of a 9th justice has a very big impact on this case.
And when might we hear a result?
Well, we will know by the end of June.
And did you get any sense today of how the justices would vote? I know it's very difficult to read them.
I think it really hinged on this phrase, lawful presence. And they asked, if you could just strike the phrase lawful presence out, then would it be a problem? And that seemed to surprise the other side, the Texas side. There was a lot of back and forth about that. So I think there's, still to be seen whether that would satisfy the justices or not.
Okay, thank you very much, Catherine, from up there at the Supreme Court, out on the street.
You are so welcome, Susan.
Coming up on International Edition, dogs are coming to the aid of air travelers and singer Kenny Rogers' last tour. I bet it's been a while since you had a fun experience at the airport, but folks have been going ooh and ah and saying, oh, they're so cute at the United Airlines concourse at Dulles International Airport outside Washington. What's all the fuss about? Poochies. Reporter Deborah Block headed on out there to experience it firsthand, and now she joins us here in the studio. Hi there, Deborah.
Hi there, Susan.
You got dog hair, all of you?
Just a bit from that experience.
Well, tell us all about it.
Well, what was going on is that United Airlines has a special program they call United Paws, and this is where a few times a year during heavy holiday flying periods, the airlines invites therapy dogs. These are dogs that are well-behaved, socialized dogs, to come to 7 airports in the United States, including Dulles, to greet passengers. And the idea of this is to help them relieve their anxiety if they're about to fly. Maybe they don't fly very much. Or let's say they're going overseas and they may have to stop several times. Or just come into the airport, let's say, from Switzerland or Germany, and they may be very tired.
Or sometimes just sitting around waiting between flights.
That's a big one.
Hours and hours and hours.
Hours and hours. And all you're thinking about is, when am I going to get there? Especially if you have a delay. And a group of dogs, in this case there were 5 when I was there, are there to be petted and hugged. And you can take pictures of them. And the reaction from the passengers is really, really heartwarming. One woman got so excited. She said, oh, my son and I were about to go home and greet our dog. And then she adds as an afterthought, oh, and my husband, too. And she laughs. You know? You can see the importance there. And another man told me that, if I heard about this program, I would have thought, are you kidding? What is this? This is silly. And he said, oh, this is the best thing.
He looked so tired and weary, and there he was petting all five dogs.
So it really works.
It really does work.
And what about the dogs? Are they enjoying it?
The dogs seem to be enjoying it a lot. So are their owners, the volunteers who have come from this group called People Animals Love. It's a Washington, D.C. dog therapy group that goes to places like nursing homes or universities when students are stressed because, you know, they have exams. Or they might bring their dogs to libraries where the children read to the dogs. And it's been shown that it actually helps kids improve their reading by just having a dog listening to them.
Well, sometimes people are a little frightened by dogs they don't know.
Well, that's true. That's true. But these dogs are very gentle, very kind, very sweet. I mean, you can hear it in my voice. They're just.
Well, you're a dog lover.
I'm a dog lover. I actually did this with my dog last year. I went to Dulles Airport and took Sergio, my cute little poodle, and we did this. And so I know what it meant to the passengers, and I know what it meant to the staff. You know, the United Airlines flight attendants and pilots, they are crisscrossing the country or even the world, you know, for days sometimes. And the pilots and flight attendants were just as excited as they were running from one flight to another to just take a moment to pet a dog. And what United Airlines is also providing to each of the dog therapy groups in the airports that do this is $1 for each photo that, let's say, a customer takes of the dog or them with the dog, and they post it on Instagram, for example. It's hashtag United Paws. And then the airlines gives $1 for each one of those photos that gets posted. So the therapy group, you know, is kind enough to bring their dogs to the airport to help out. And then in return, United Airlines provides a financial donation that helps these groups that are usually running on a shoestring. They don't have a whole lot of money.
Okay, well, thank you so much, Deborah, and get out that clothes brush.
Oh, I sure will. I got a lot to get off me.
This is VOA.
Do you lead a busy life? Not always able to catch your favorite VOA radio or TV program? If you are keen to stay in touch with world news and events, give VOA podcasts a try.
VOANews.com.
Visit our website at VOANews.com to learn how you can become a subscriber to VOA podcasts and keep your life up to date.
VOA News, your trusted source for news and information.
I'm Millar Sega, host of VOA's The Correspondents, a weekly roundup of the top stories with analysis from our dedicated reporters around the globe.
Among the stars expressing support, Frida Pinto.
This is a problem that inflicts almost every country.
Think of it as a conversation on the biggest issues of the day. Wherever the news may be, our correspondents are there. Listen to The Correspondents, Saturdays and Sundays on VOA.
Many of you may know Kenny Rogers from his song Lady or his duet with Dolly Parton, Islands in the Stream. His albums, The Gambler and Kenny, have been called two of the most influential in country music history. He has won numerous awards and charted more than 150 hits across various genres. In late September, Kenny Rogers announced his pending retirement from music and just released the details of his final worldwide tour. Nikki Strong of VOA Music joins International Edition Sarah Williams to tell us what this Country Music Hall of Famer has in store.
So, Nikki, when does the tour kick off, and what does Kenny have planned for the show?
The tour is called The Gambler's Last Deal. It starts in May and goes through mid-November, but dates are still being added. They anticipate it will go into 2017. It begins May 13th in Minnesota. It cuts across the U.S., and then it hits the Philippines in August. And then it goes to Scotland, the Netherlands, Ireland, and England in the fall thus far. The show itself, he says, will be a retrospective covering his 50-plus year career. It'll include personal stories and photos and video clips. He'll be performing songs outside of his common set list. And he also said expect more of his comedy dialogues, too. And Grammy-winning country singer Linda Davis, who, by the way, is also the mother of Hillary Scott of Lady Antebellum, and Charlie Warsham will be his guest.
Well, many country artists perform well past retirement, so why has he decided to call it quits?
Well, it's still past retirement for him, but he decided to really call it quits, primarily to spend time, more time with his twin sons, who I think are about 12 years old now. He says, I've done everything I could do. He said, I've won everything I could win, and now my life has to go on. He also recently shared that he feels that today's country music is going in another direction, and he's not interested in competing.
Well, this notion of country music moving in another direction or away from its roots is an ongoing theme in the country music discourse.
Yeah, it is. Country music has always experienced a certain amount of pop success and crossover success, but pop music is changing. And as contemporary country artists endeavor to create crossover success, they're going to borrow from what's popular. So in addition to many current artists, they've also grown up on other musical influences and in different historical times than the older artists. But overall, though, I think music is cyclical, and eventually people will turn to their roots to receive inspiration. So I think popular country music may start to have a more traditional aesthetic in the future. And there's definitely an audience for it.
And many in that audience will most likely catch Kenny Rogers on this tour.
Most definitely.
For more information on the Gambler's Last Deal Tour, you can go to KennyRogers.com. You can also hear more traditional and contemporary country music on Country Hits USA with Nikki Strong on VOA 1. To reach Nikki, you can connect on Facebook at VOA Music or on Twitter at VOA_music. Thanks, Nikki.
You're welcome.
Baby, when I met you, there was peace unknown. I set out to get you with a fine-tooth comb. I was soft inside. There was something going on.
We would like to invite you to follow us on Twitter. You can find us at VOA_IE. And don't forget about our website, voanews.com. Thanks for joining us today for International Edition.
Next, an editorial reflecting the views of the United States government.
The Africa Logistic Forum is an example of how the United States can support African nations to examine and explore continuing logistics challenges in Africa's security sector, said U.S. Ambassador to Ghana, Robert Jackson. Speaking at the opening ceremony of the Africa Logistics Forum in Accra, April 12th, the ambassador noted, "The forum focuses on analyzing the existing logistic gaps, explores practical applications, and surveys sound principles for effective logistics management." The United States, he said, continues to recognize the importance of the Kofi Annan International Peacekeeping Training Center. The center's mission to provide training, education, and research to foster peace and stability in Africa is vital and has impact on real lives throughout Africa. The center has already trained more than 11,000 people from diverse organizations in essential aspects of peacekeeping operations. The United States' main objective, said Ambassador Jackson, is to support African nations with all required assistance. It is imperative to have experienced personnel with the right equipment and training if we are to overcome the logistical obstacles we face in garrison, operational, or tactical environments. Our Ghanaian partners have been a major contributor to the United Nations peacekeeping operations, he said, supplying more than 3,000 personnel, including police, military observers, and troops, in the past 8 years. Exercises such as the Logistics Peacekeeping Operations and the African Deployment Assistance Partnership Team, conducted in Ghana, Togo, and Benin in the last 2 years, have been essential for training logistical units and personnel. The Logistics Peacekeeping Operations is a training event focused on logistics before, during, and after peacekeeping operations. This exercise covered sustainment principles, including preventative maintenance checks and services, subsistence and field feeding, general supply, transportation, distribution, as well as logistical estimates. In addition, the African Deployment Assistance Partnership Team bridges the gap between limited deployment capacity to participating nations in peacekeeping operations, humanitarian response operations, and contingency operations. Ambassador Jackson told the forum participants that the United States and the nations of Africa share a common destiny. I am confident, he said, that work like yours will allow us to marshal the tools necessary to craft partnerships and, as Kofi Annan said, to face our goals together.
That was an editorial reflecting the views of the United States government.